Hello,
I'm Kelsey,
and I'm Kim.
Welcome to episode 17 of season 5 of the Massive Fans Book Club podcast. Today we're covering chapters 69 through 73. Kim and I had to discuss that because we could have easily done 69 all the way to the fucking end because the way this just like takes off like a rocket, but that's beside the point. Of course, Silver Flames by Sarah J. Maas.
Yeah.
Disclaimer up at the top, we're recording while my small child is still awake, which like we usually don't do that. So if you hear some wild stuff in the background, no you didn't, okay? Like, no you didn't. We're just all gonna pretend, okay?
That's right.
Yeah. So like I said, we're really like trucking through to the end here. One of my favorite like scenes is in this chunk though, so I'm excited about that.
Same. Very cool. Yeah, definitely. Same here. Yeah,
like one of the better like action sequences is in this section, which I do really like.
It's probably one of the better action sequences that we've seen since book one, when she's fighting the Midgard worm.
You're right. You're actually really right. I hadn't even really thought about how like I feel like that was kind of a big chunk that's been missing in the book.
Well, there's that. And then the only other action sequence, truly, in my opinion, that we've had that's been truly this good is that whole, the last couple, well, not quite the last couple of chapters, but that whole bit where in Crescent City, where Bryce is fighting all the demons and the whole bit.
Yeah, that one was really good.
That was a great scene, too. And then, Fury and all them then in the helicopter the whole bit, so that was another really good one. We haven't had a whole lot, and so I have to admit that and we also had the whole bit where Feyre the water wolves kills what's its face,
the flappy thing, wow, what the fuck is wrong with us today?
Coffee hasn't kicked in yet.
What is wrong? Wow. Oh, Jesus. I can picture it. I'm going to keep making the flying motions for those of you who
are
watching.
It's like the big bat. The ugly big bat thing. Yeah. It was Queen A's little crony.
And it was like a whole thing. It was like a whole fucking thing. For two straight books, it was a whole fucking thing.
And that was a really good battle scene, but truly we don't have that many. And so I agree. I love this. It's really well written. It's
similarly
got a great pace
to it. What I was going to say is similarly written, but not an action scene, was that whole section with dancing with Eris. That was written very, very well, very similar to these very well-written fight scenes. But you're right. Like I didn't realize it until we started really like talking about it, like really recording the episodes, and you're like talking out loud and you're like, going through it like page by page. That's when all of a sudden I was like, I think that's why Akawar isn't typically anybody's favorite.
True.
It's not that it's not really good story. It's that it's missing these like really, really vibrantly described sequences. You know what I mean? Like looking back at Akawar, I can't really think of any sequence that is really, really well described that I'm like, oh, I can just like picture every little tiny, like, nuance of like, if you were to film it, you know what I mean? I do get that with Eris and Nesta and Eris dancing. I do get that with, like the water wolves. We do get that like back in book one with the Midgard worm. Like I always say that I can picture perfectly exactly like where Rhys is standing when he says like she's just made herself invisible,
And it's amazing.
But now that I think about it, the only moment you get like that in Akawar to me is when her father dies. That section where her father dies and then like Nesta throws herself on Cassian and we get the bit with Elaine and everybody's there, that is very well orchestrated, but it's still not a sequence per se. It's just a really well orchestrated scene that I can picture. It's not, I don't know. Yeah. It's like the pros are different. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it is. And I'm with you. I can't explain it. However, I do want to say one thing. So you and I were messaging earlier, and we've been trading these TikToks.
Yes.
And all I have to say is, I wish I had a valid passport. And I wish I had the money.
Passport and $1.98 to my name.
Yeah. I don't even have a valid passport. Mine's expired. And it's in my maiden name. It's not even in my married name.
Girl, so I'm me too.
Maybe we should do something about that. But that being said, anyway, so we've been trading.
Oh, did we just figure out our 2024 resolutions?
Yeah, so I have to get my husband a passport and my kid a passport too. So that's a whole different
stupid story. I got my kid one. I'm not sure where I thought she was going to go without me. Truthfully, like, why did I get her one? But we didn't renew ours. I don't know.
Yeah, but you know what? If you're going to fly, she has ID.
I guess that's what I was thinking. I guess I was just thinking that children have no IDs unless they have passports. I don't know.
I don't know. So anyway.
But yeah, we have been
trading these TikToks, and yeah. I'm going to give an unpaid shout out to at Hush Fable for their Hush Fable ball that they're doing, their Starfall ball that they are doing at the end of March in London.
Okay, so, like, if anybody is going, probably, let's be real, the chances of that, since I think most of our listeners are American-based, probably slim to none. But on the chance that you are one of our European listeners who's like, oh, yeah, I'm going, or a rich American friend pictures. We didn't know we had, hey!
Pictures. I want pictures, damn it. And the reason is, I saw Tyler James's post on, you know, his reel saying he was going to be resand at this, right? And I was like, okay. Like, I'm not going to lie, you guys. Over the years, he's truly grown on me.
Yes! Like, first I was skeptical, but we've now been here so long that he just is Reese to me. A little bit like Kaven just is Cassian.
Love her. She's awesome, but I'm like, seriously, girl. She has the Cassie and him bow. She has it down.
At this point, I'm just like, she can't be worse than anyone else. Might as well cast her. What do I care?
But then you found Stuart McKay. It's just Stuart.
Yes, he's
who's going to be Lucien.
Yeah, he usually does Tamlin on like all of his videos, but he's going as Lucien, which I like lost my mind about, which is how Kim and I started talking about this, because she knew even before I did. But when I saw that video, I sent it to her because I was like, I've been screaming from the rooftops for like 2 years that he is what I picture is Lucien. He would be such a good Lucien. I kept saying he would actually be a better Lucien than he is Tamlin. Because Tamlin has like a different set of like trauma versus I feel like Stuart really nails like how Lucien feels about himself.
I agree. Yeah. And so anyway, it's just comical. So, but they're both going to be there. And so myself, as well as other people, if you go to the Hush Fable Instagram, when they announced Stuart doing Lucien, because they had another person originally, don't know what happened, but Stuart's the replacement, but excellent choice, not going to complain.
Yes.
Somebody's like, oh my god, Tyler James and Stuart McKay at the same place at the same time. I'm so there. I wish I could be there.
Is the world going to implode? Like, is that possible?
And like, I gotta admit,
the TV show we're ever going to get, probably.
Truly. And I gotta admit, I was just like, all right, and I've told Kelsey this. I would, if I could, I want to go. Like, I can't, but I really want to, because I think it would be really cool. And, you know, all right, I'm going to age myself for a moment. Internally, mentally, emotionally, in many ways, I still feel like I'm probably about the same age as you, Kelsey. Too bad I've got 20 years on you, and, I'm not. So I know in a way.
I think I'm still older than both of them. I'm pretty sure.
Stuart, yes. I don't know about Tyler. Tyler, you and Tyler either.
Yeah, we might be very.
You and Tyler are about the same age, roughly.
Stuart's like my sister's age, so it's not super weird. But like, I do laugh sometimes when he says stuff, and I'm like, oh no, I'm older than you.
How do you think I feel? I'm older than all of them. Anyway.
It's okay. Do you want to feel real weird? Random shout out for a current book I'm reading. Go read Six of Crows and then let me know if you feel like the oldest human who has ever walked the earth. I do.
Yeah. Been there. Started it. Yeah. I'm with you.
Different side quest. If you're reading that and you have felt that way and you're like, oh no, I am an old decrepit grandma. Okay, well then go get on Discord and tell me about it because same.
Yeah. Tell us about it because we're there. But anyway, it was funny. So I was joking because I was kind of having a little fangirl moment. I don't usually do that, but I was having a bit of a fangirl moment. So what can I say anyway? So what we want to say is anybody who's out here who listens, just please get on Discord, talk to us about it, send us photos. We would love to see, we want to see your costumes, the whole bit. So anyway.
What date is it?
March 30th.
Don't mind me while I stand up.
It's at the Natural History Museum in London.
This is me showing
off
my whole
London.
Shirt while I look at my calendar that's behind my computer. March 30th. Look, it's an ACOTAR shirt. Well, it's ACOMAF, I should say. The 30th. Ooh, that's a Saturday. Okay. I mean, I'm sort of feeling like maybe we just all get dressed up anyway and take pictures and put them in the Discord and we have a virtual Starfall ball that day. Anybody interested?
Ooh, I like it. I like it. I got people out there I know will do it.
Maybe we should do that. Okay. Yeah, look for details in the Discord. Maybe we'll just like all get dressed up and send each other photos. It'll be fun. Anyway.
Promise. I don't have a costume, but that's a whole different story.
Yeah. It's okay. You got 8 weeks. It's fine.
With my schedule?
It's in our minds. Okay, Kim? We're trying to make 2024 better than 2023. We're just going to do our best here.
True.
Okay.
Right,
and then
go ahead.
Yeah. Long story short, before we get totally side tangent for like 3 days, because we could easily do that, especially because right now we're fueled by coffee, which makes us wild.
Yep.
So we are committing for 2024 to keeping up with our 2 episodes a month. That's our goal anyway, through 2024. That was our goal in 2023 and we were pretty close, but 2024, it's going to be better. We're just feeling it. We're feeling it, guys. We're feeling it. We're going to do the 2 episodes a month, which means we should wrap up A Court of Silver Flames quickly. Obviously, because we're on chapter 73 and there's only like 80 chapters or something in the whole thing. And then we're going to go into Crescent City 2. And the only reason I'm giving everybody that heads up is because Crescent City 3 is coming out. So like, if that's you, you're reading that like the minute it drops, then like you do your thing. Actually, by the time this episode comes out, I think it's already out. So there's that. But yeah. So you read Crescent City 3 and just know that we're like hella far behind you and it just is what it is.
Right.
Kim will read it. So you can still talk in the Discord in that chat about it with Kim. I'm just saying, like, as far as like when we're talking about things on our episodes, it's going to be another like year and a half before we can talk about Crescent City 3. Okay.
And I have heard we have somebody who listens to the podcast who is one of my best friend's younger sisters. And she's way ahead on all of this, so I don't know. We'll see if she does this. I already told her sister to have her contact me because we haven't done Throne of Glass, and she's like all upset because she wants to talk to someone about Throne of Glass. So, Heather, I'm telling you now, girl, just get a hold of me, reach out. Your sister knows. I told her to tell you.
Right.
I'm happy to talk Throne of Glass with you. We haven't figured out when or how we're going to get the Throne of Glass, but that's a whole different story.
Which is part of the reason I also brought up that we're rolling into Crescent City 2 next, because I think at one point we had said we didn't know if we were going to do Crescent City 2 or if we were going to go back and do Throne of Glass. We're doing Crescent City 2, like, just hold your horses on Throne of Glass. We haven't quite, figured that one out yet.
But I am making Kelsey read it.
Yes, like I'm reading it. We just won't be recording about it yet. So we're still trying to work out how we're going to do those books.
Yeah. So she has to read them because I, as anybody who listens who has read everything knows, I think you all would agree that Crescent City 3, by the time we get there, if you don't know what happens to Throne of Glass, you're fucked. So
although thanks to the internet, I do know. That's beside the point.
Well, there are Easter eggs that have led up to this point that we're all kind of like, okay, where are we with X, Y, and Z? So anyway, we'll get there. But That being said, back to this episode, this podcast, you know this. This podcast is not for little ears. There you go.
Okay, cool. So, like, are you starting? Am I starting? Where the hell did we leave off? What's happening? We're back to Eris. We're back at the... We've been flip-flopping back and forth, right? We've been going back and forth between, like, the girls determining that they are going to climb Ramiel, which I think is just a wild choice, but it's not here nor there. and then we've got Azriel and Cassian dealing with the Eris situation, so that's where Chapter 69 picks up.
Mm-hmm.
So it says, Eris and the small caravan rode eastward for 3 days, stopping only to eat and sleep. Kim, that math don't fucking math. When we left off in 68, there weren't even 3 days left between the, like, where they were at the bottom of Ramiel and the end of the right. So this has to have happened technically before Chapter 68, right?
I guess, or congruently.
Sure, maybe congruently. Yeah, I'd have to see exactly where 68 started, but I sort of feel like actually the sequence of events is like 67, 69, 68.
She's notorious for doing that, because she does it. That's why there's the tandem read in Throne of Glass for Empire Storms and Tower of Dawn, because both of the books are literally happening at the same time.
Sure. So yeah, I don't know. I just thought that was super weird when I read that. I was like, I'm sorry, what? So anyway, they're still stalking Eris under the assumption that he is a treat. I'm still a little confused. So Kim, set me straight. We're stalking him under the assumption that he is a traitor, willingly working with Bryn Allen? Is that what we think?
Yeah.
Okay, it don't make no sense, but that's what we think. Okay, cool. Okay, as long as that.
Well, they get to a lake, and Azriel and Cassian finally land instead of being up in the air.
Sure.
There's this whole group, and they're talking rather loudly, and Cassian and Azriel think they're being stealthy. They see Eris's horse, they don't see Eris, and then all of a sudden it's over here, Cassian. And Cassian whirled around and found Eris quite literally holding a knife to his ribs. And we get a snowflake.
Yeah. Super fucking weird, like little just like boop in there. So yeah, then we get a snowflake. We are back to whatever. Whatever. It's like the day, but we got like 24 hours left to the right. That's where we're at, about not quite 24 hours. And we're trying to bust ass up the mountain. And it's going, it's going like we thought it would go, which is why I thought we should not do this, which is Nessa can barely breathe, Gwen's dragging, Emery's panting, nobody has any water left. Like, they don't feel like they're gaining any actual traction. So there's that.
Yeah. On the bright side, though, they haven't seen or heard anybody else. That's a positive.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, I guess. It's like, sometimes you're like, is it? Like, okay, like, have you ever driven on a highway and then you realize you're like the only one on it and you start to think, like, did I miss a sign that said don't go here? Like, I sort of feel like that about this. They're like, oh, good. Nobody's here. Uh-huh. Yeah. Nobody's here. I don't know if that's the blessing you think it is, but that's fine. They do take a small break, and then suddenly, oh shit, never mind. There are people here.
Well, oopsies. They took a small break, we get a snowflake. When they finally get done with their break, and they start up again, we get the snowflake. Night's fallen. And I like this description. Night had fallen, the moon bright enough to keep the breaking's path illuminated to show those three stars above Ramiel's peak, beckoning, waiting.
Sure.
If they reached it by dawn, it'd be a miracle. Okay, so Gwen is at the point now where she's so bad that her skin's gotten that weird gray tone, which is never a good sign.
No. again, almost like maybe we shouldn't have done this.
Yeah, almost. Emery's hurt and she sprained her ankle. They're all moving slowly, but Emery is like, at least she knows the pass of Analeas isn't too far ahead. If we make it through the archway, then it's a clear shot to the top. And Gwen finally is like, I'm not sure I can. And they acknowledge, Nesta realizes they're about 4 hours from dawn, and then it would be over. Would it matter? And then Nesta has this thought process going, you know, would it matter if they'd reached the peak, if they'd won, they'd gotten this far, they'd... And then all of a sudden Gwen's like, how'd they get here? Nesta went still.
Kim, I'm just realizing now, looking at my notes, that we get an F. This is all exactly how it happens for Nesta and them, but we skipped a paragraph back with Cassian and Asriel and Aerys.
Oops.
We did. It's because it literally fits between two snowflakes. So depending on, like, I'm looking at it on my screen at, like, regular typeface, and then I, like, switched the size. And, like, if you go, it's, you can literally miss it because if you, like, switch. Anyway.
Oops.
Yes. So we'll go back to that. No, you're fine. We'll go back to that in a second, which is no problem because, like I said, these are two separate things happening kind of on two separate timelines anyway, which is why they, it reads weird anyway. But going back to Aerys, the key here is there's one paragraph where we get a little blip of what's happening. And Aerys says a thing that makes them all feel weird about how this situation's going. Because he's got him with the knife and he and Asriel's trying to fight back, being like, you can't win this. Like, you're a dead man walking. And he says, yes, yes. And all that old business with the Morrigan, how boring of you to cling to it. And Cassian's like, he's never fucking called her that. He doesn't call her the Morrigan. He's never said it like that before. So all of a sudden Cassian's like, no, there's something wacky happening here. Like, this is not just Aerys being an asshole. Like, something's going on with the Bree Allen, like, side of this. And so Cassian's like, you know, let him go, Bree Allen, come play with us instead. Because Cassian's trying to lure her away from everybody else. But then we get a really crappy line, which is, I'm already playing with you, Lord of Bastards. So, that's not fucking great.
Yeah, that's kind of foreshadowing.
But yeah, there's just like one little paragraph in there squished in between where it's like, Cassian suddenly is like, oh, mate, like, this whole time I've been bitching about Aerys being a traitor, but maybe that dagger didn't work as well as we hoped. Or maybe we're playing into it on purpose because there's something he knows. Like, all of a sudden, Cassian's like, woo, red flag, something is not as it seems.
Definitely a danger, Will Robinson moment, yes.
Yeah, so at some point, while they've been climbing the mountain, I guess, that happened on that side of things. But yes, anyway, going back to Gwen, she feels like shit, and she's trying to convince them to go on without her.
Well, they finally realize that Belius and six of his guys are not that far away.
Yeah.
And neither Emery or Gwen are in any shape physically to do any fighting. The only one who could fight at all is Nesta. So Nesta's like, fuck this. She gets them. You know, she gets Gwen on her back, quite literally, so that Emery doesn't have to carry her. And, you know, as she says this, I love that she goes, she had climbed the 10,000 stairs at the House of Wind up and down, over and over and over again, perhaps for this very moment. And all of a sudden, Nessa's like, we're winning this fucking thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's hurting. Her knees aren't buckling. She's like, she's looking forward. She refuses to look behind. And Nesta is climbing with Emery limping behind her, and she's carrying Gwen on her back.
Yeah. Which is someone who can barely carry their 30-pound toddler, I cannot imagine.
Yeah, you know, so go. And basically it was like, you know, the Belius and his crew are falling behind them, and it's that whole, you know, Nesta gets feeling that the mountain's like, go. Like, yeah. Kind of rooting them on, and we get a snowflake. And we're back to Cassie and Eris and Azrael and Briallen.
Or is that where you are now? My notes may be out of order compared to yours, because I'm not seeing that. Like, what? That's where I am now. I'm missing a snowflake. Are you on the Nook or on the Nook. Kindle? Okay, I'm on the Kindle. I think I'm missing a snowflake, because earlier when you said there was a snowflake, I was like, no, there's not. So then I flipped up to the next snowflake.
I'm on the Nook.
Interesting.
All of my ebooks for SJM are on the Nook.
Yeah, I feel like you and I ran into this one other time. I'm not fully convinced that there seems to be a disconnect or something, but I am missing
unless
a page.
It's a version issue.
Yeah, could be, because I've obviously bought mine very recently.
It almost makes me wonder if the Nook version, because I always get the Nook version right as it comes out, the day of release, if the Nook version, because it's Barnes & Noble, I get the Barnes & Noble version.
Oh, so there may be a slight, yeah, because I've thought that before, that I wonder if, and I've wondered this too, because I don't, like, I have physical copies, but I read them digitally, if the page break happens at the bottom, I don't know if she always puts a snowflake there, but
yeah,
like, they have to in Kindle, because it changes depending on, like, your font size and stuff.
Right.
Anyway, sorry, carry on. So maybe now is when you're talking about the Cassian part. I thought you were already there because you had said snowflake, so I jumped to my snowflake.
Yes, because in fact, this is the whole bit about... That's the whole bit we just talked about.
Okay, well, cool. Now we already talked about it. All right, carry on.
And then we have... So we're back to Nesta and the girls.
Fascinating, yeah.
Gwen's blood loss is so bad she could barely hold on and had made her that weak.
Yeah.
They get up to the Pass of Nalius because all of a sudden, as it's described, the breaking flowed through an archway of black stone where the path had become broader and easier. The Pass of Nalius. Emery had paused only long enough to run a bleeding hand over the stone, her dirty face full of wonder and pride. And she's like, I am standing where none of my ancestors have been before.
Yeah.
But Nesta knew she couldn't stop. Because if she did, she wasn't going to move again. Everything at least flattens out. That makes life a lot easier for the girls. But they did reach a cluster of stones.
Yeah.
That they're going to have to climb. Dawn's about 2 hours off. Remember, this ends at dawn, finally. Thank fuck, right? But at the rate they're going, she also knows that the men are going to, Belius and his guys are going to catch them. Nesta's knees are buckling. She's going face down. And she literally hangs on to Gwen. She hits the archway of stone.
Yeah.
And they realize Gwen's alive.
Yeah, she's alive, but like barely. And this is when Nesta with everyone.
Right. Nesta has come to the realization she can't carry Gwen anymore. She's exhausted. And Gwen's like, fine, we'll rest, then we continue. And Nesta's like, we will never make it in time, or at least before
they catch up.
Belius and his crew reach us.
Yeah.
Emery's like, we're going to try anyway. And, you know, maybe the dawn will reach us before they do. Nesta's looking down and she's like, nope, they're going to get to us first.
Yeah.
And Nesta's finally like, look, I can hold them off. And Nesta's finally like, you're both injured. You will not survive the fight, but you can manage the climb. Emery can help. And they're both like, no. And she's like, I can use the bottleneck of the path right here to keep them off long enough for you two to reach the top or Dawn to come, whichever happens first. Yeah. And Gwen's like, I refuse to leave you here. And Emery realizes the logic of what Nesta's saying and doing.
Yeah.
And Nesta is telling Gwen, it is the only way. And Gwen's like, nope, I will not abandon you. They're going to kill you.
Yeah, Gwen's in like hysterics. Yeah, Gwen is in hysterics thinking about her sister. Like, she's like, I'm about to watch this happen all over again.
And she's like, you need to go now. And Gwen's like, no, no, I'm going to face it. And I love this because it says something deep in Nesta's chest cracked open completely, and what lay within bloomed full and bright and pure. She wraps her arms around Gwen and she's like, you know, promise me. And Gwen's like, promise me we're going to face it together. And Nesta's like, I promise. I promise. And then as Gwen is sobbing, she does the Vulcan trick.
Yeah. Yeah.
That Cassian had shown her to take somebody out.
Knock a guy out. Yeah.
Gwen goes down unconscious. She lowers Gwen to the ground. She peers up at Emery, who's not surprised. And Nesta's like, can you carry her the rest of the way, or at least to keep going until dawn? And Emery's like, yes. Emery puts the sword down and the dagger and the shield for Nesta. Yeah. And Nesta's like, keep the canteens. I've got enough. And Emery's like, she'll never forgive you for this. And Nesta's like, I know. But at the same time, she wanted...
Yeah.
She's looking out for her friends to keep them safe. Yeah. She really is. That is primary goal one.
What I love about this... Okay, first of all, I love that, like, that whole heart bloom thing made me laugh, because I obviously read this, you know, a couple months ago, so right before Christmas, and I was like, why does this feel like the Grinch? And the Grinch's heart grew three sizes that day.
Three sizes that day.
That was fucking funny to me when I read it. But then also, I love this because I think this paints a really good picture of kind of the difference between Nesta and Feyre, because I don't think Feyre would have knocked Gwen out. Like, I think Feyre would have just argued with her, or would have let her stay, or whatever. Like, Feyre would have tried. It's not that Feyre wouldn't care about her friends in the same way, but she just wouldn't have fought it the same way. Versus, I think this plays into that whole Nesta and Rhys don't get along because they're very similar.
And I agree.
I think that was kind of to me, that felt like a very Rhys moment where it's like, I will just lie to your face to keep you safe. And like, we can talk about the ethics of that separately, but she's doing in this moment the only solution she can come up with.
Exactly. Exactly.
So, and I think it's really interesting to see Emery's take on it, because Emery doesn't really argue with her. She just points out the obvious of like, when Gwen wakes up, she's going to be pissed. And it's we know. So it's just really interesting, because if you really think about it, like, the way that their friendship is, I don't know. It's like, I was trying to place, like, out of, like, I feel like they, the Nesta, like, Nesta, Emery, and Gwen more closely mimic the three Bat Boys and their friendship than anything Feyre has, because Feyre's friendship with everybody is very different.
Absolutely.
So, like, it's just really interesting to me. I was like, I guess that makes Nesta the Rhys of the group, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so fascinating. Well, and Emery, one last time, does try to convince her to come with them. And Nesta's, I love it. Nesta's like, nope, consider it the repayment of a debt.
Yeah.
And Emery's like, for what? And, Nesta's like, for being my friends even when I didn't deserve it. So it's a beautiful little moment between
Yeah.
between the girls. So
Yeah, and they carry on up, and the last thought we get as Nesta is preparing herself before the snowflake is she was the rock against which the surf broke. These males would break against her, too.
Snowflake!
Back to whatever the fuck is going on with Braylon. I feel like the more I read, the less I understand, but that's okay. So Eris is in Briallen's grip. Cassian and Azriel are also there, and they can't really fight back either. And, like, Cassian can't even really place, like, himself what's going on. He's like, am I, like, blindly following because I'm stuck under her spell? Or, like what am I, like, what is even happening right now? And, like, Azriel's also just kind of there, like, following. And it's like, is Azriel under her spell? Am I under her spell? What are we doing? Like, are we... I'm very confused. Is this just the power of suggestion or real magic? Like,
what? Well, because we found out that who they thought was Briallen isn't Briallen.
Right. So what is happening?
And then all of a sudden there's this shadow and Cassian's like... Azriel goes, who are you? Cassian knows. Cassian's like, Kusche.
Yeah.
And we get a snowflake.
Yeah. So, like, they've just been blindly following not Briallen for a hot minute. Yeah. And then they're like, that's not Briallen. And then they're like, oh my god, and that over there is Kusche. Like I said, I don't, like, the more I read, the more I'm like, I don't really understand what's happening. And it's okay. Anyway.
It's not it's not well fleshed out.
No. It isn't. And like I said, and as far as timeline goes, I don't really feel like it actually fits in where it's been put in. So I'm confused about that too. But it's okay. Our last paragraph in this chapter, or our last, like, after the snowflake, we get like one page and it's back to Nesta preparing. And she, you know, takes her last drink of water and she's got the sword and she draws a line in the dirt. Of, like, where the archway is, like, this is the line I'm trying to, like, keep them in front of, right? And she said in her mind, it's her final stand, her last line of defense. And she's gathering all of this stuff and she is preparing as she's, like, hearing them get closer and closer. And it says, you know, a small, quiet smile passed over Nesta's face. Then she hefted her shield, angled her sword, and stepped beyond the line she'd drawn to meet her enemy.
Yep. Chapter 70. Woo.
Okay, so now chapter 70 is literally like a page and a half.
Yes.
And it is my favorite scene. This is the one I was talking about. So once Bellius gets up to them, it's the start of the bottleneck and she's trying to keep them down. And so she, like, Bellius is almost realizing as they get up, like, oh shit, like she's thinking about this one. But she's also thinking, I have no choice but to meet you here.
Not only that, but the other thing is that Bellius is strategic enough that he sends his men before him to meet her, and part of it is to wear her out.
Sure.
And she's just, fuck this, I'm gonna win, not happening.
Yeah. So she, I like the, and I guess this is what I like about it. I like the, like, mental, like, what happens in her brain where she says, you know, like, I'm not going to fail my friends. Like, there is no room for me to be scared. Like, this is all just calm determination. And I love this. Only calm determination and love. Like, she loves, and that's exactly how you want somebody to go into this. And that's why I said,
absolutely.
I think that she and Reese are so similar. Because I think all the shit that Reese gets all the time about, like, well, you made these decisions without us. And it's like, he did, and that was wrong. But on the other hand, his intentions were so good. He loves you so much. You know what I mean? And that's exactly where Nesta's coming from. And I love that for her. Because I think when you start this book, you don't think she's ever going to be able to get there. Or you think that even if she does, she will only ever be able to do it for Cassian because that's her mate. So the fact that she can, like, get beyond that is, I think, a really cool, like, she's really come so far.
Absolutely.
But she also has this thought as she's preparing of, like, wow, like, I am starting to do really well with this. Like, I am on fire. I can't even imagine what I could do with Ataraxia. And we finally find out what the fuck that name of her sword is about. Nesta engaged 4 of the Illyrians at once, then 5, then 6, and the males started to go down one after another. Nesta held the line in a storm of unflinching focus and death, guarding her friends at her back. Ataraxia, she had named that magic sword. Inner peace.
I love it.
Which I love.
I love it.
So 71, Kim, you start this because I feel like I have a lot of questions.
No worries. So yeah, so 71, we're back with Cassian and Az. You know, they're... It's just... It's okay.
Kim's realizing she's going to have to, like, dumb this way down for me.
I also realized on this rereading, I need to refamiliarize myself with the... with the mythology of the
post-J lore.
Yeah. Well, the Firebird.
Yeah.
So I need to go back and look at the Firebird story. It's been a long time. So everybody out there who knows it better than me, I'm really sorry. My brain's been a little preoccupied with 20 million other things.
Oh, that's a good point. Maybe that's going to tell me what I'm... Okay, well, you talk, and then I'll ask my question. And it's now occurring to me as you say that, that maybe that's where I'll get my answer. Like, maybe I need to go look that up, too.
No problem.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Sorry, I just got a text that pulled my attention. I apologize. See, guys, this is what happens. Now that you get to actually watch us do this, you're going to understand that normally I'd be like, pause this, because I have to actually answer a text for work.
Yeah, isn't that always the best? I love that for us. Okay, well then you do that. I will set the stage real quick. So, Briallen wasn't actually there, and so Asriel speak. I will say Asriel's entire existence in this book might just be to say the things that the reader sometimes wants to say. So, okay, cool. Where is Briallen? And Kostya says, "I spend so many months preparing for you, and you don't even wish to speak to me," which is kind of funny.
That is funny. I mean, it's like, okay, well, and now what? Like,
also, I realized I have a problem, Kim. What does Kostya look like?
We don't know.
Okay. Because, yeah, I just have sort of like a nothing imagery in my head, which is making this conversation really difficult for my brain to understand, like, what we're dealing with in a way. Like, I realize it like doesn't super matter, but it's like I'm having a hard time picturing, like, am I supposed to just picture like a man? Is it an old man? Is it a large man? Is it a man at all? Is Kostya just like a wraithy looking thing, like a grim reapery looking thing? Is it like, I don't know what I'm thinking.
I always think of him as like a grumpy old man, but I know that's probably not right. I mean,
right? So do I. Well, basically, what I realize is I'm just picturing Kostya as like an older, more irritated Hybern.
Yes and no, because then, for those of you out there who have read Throne of Glass, you're going to understand what I say. I almost want to say I picture him like Erewhon. And if that's the case, then that takes us to a whole new level of bad guy. Mm-hmm. Think along the lines of the Asteri from Crescent City.
I know, but I had a hard time understanding that too. Right. Right, exactly. Notice how all of this class of thing doesn't have a good descriptor and is just like, use your imagination. And I'm like, cool, cool. My imagination wants more.
Right.
But that's okay. Whatever. It's fine. Everything's fine. Anyway, he's talking to Kostya, whatever the fuck Kostya looks like. And Cassian says, let Eris go and then we'll talk. And I want to trust Cassian. I'm like, Cassian, my boy, this is the time to let, like, your plan shine. Like, this is the time to come up with a good plan. So I am choosing to believe making sure Eris gets let go is part of your plan. But what is your plan? Again, I'm gonna need more. I am trusting Cassian in this moment. Based off of what? I don't fucking know.
Right.
I guess it's the okay, and I said this earlier where I was like, walk me through. We believe that he's a traitor and that the dagger, he's doing it willingly, and the dagger is making it so that he's not siding with Raylan because he has to, but because he wants to. Then we decided in the next little section that the dagger wasn't working and that he was under Raylan's spell. And now we've decided that he's got Rhys level plan ahead and he's pretending, like going back to what you and I originally said, which is Aerys is pretending because Cassian is saying, like, Cassian's, I guess, hoping that that's the case. I guess that's why he wants Aerys to be let go. Because what it says is, let Aerys go and then we'll talk. He prayed Kostya didn't know of the made dagger that Aerys had again sheathed at his side, that the crown's aura of power had blinded even Briallen to its presence. So I guess he's hoping that he can just be like, let Aerys go, you don't need him, you have me. And then once Aerys is free, Aerys can be like, whoo, don't gotta pretend that no more, now I can go alert the armies. Like,
or something. So anyway, and Kostya, now that I'm back, I'm so sorry, everybody.
He's
rather full of himself. He has a lot of hubris, and he's just like, you know, well, you fell for that rather easily. I thought, though you took your time making contact, I thought you'd rush in for the kill, brute that you are. So I have to say, Kostya definitely has some hubris. I'm curious to see how that plays out later.
Yeah, doesn't it feel like Kostya? Okay. All right, I'm gonna go ahead.
But here's the thing. So I want to get through this.
Yeah.
So anyway, Kostya is laughing, Azrael's stiffening, and apparently the shadows are telling him something. Az is suddenly like, run! And readying to go. And Cassian gets ready to launch into the air. They're both getting ready to disappear. Azrael grabs Aerys, shoots into the skies, taking the dagger with them.
Mm-hmm.
Realizing they have to get it far, far away from Kostya, not mm-hmm. to mention Briallen.
Mm-hmm.
Cassian can't move.
Mm-hmm.
To which point, then, so Az is screaming for Cassian. Cassian can't move. And right. Az is getting away to safety with Aerys, right? And then Kostya is just like, oh, you can take him now, Briallen, and you have plenty of time before dawn.
Okay.
Which means either Kostya, like, the target was Cassian the whole time.
Right. Okay. Yes.
So because Briallen, Cassian was the target the whole time because mm-hmm. Briallen wants Nesta, mm-hmm. and to get to Nesta, she has to get Cassian.
Cassian, right. That I totally understand. That part makes sense to me. It's kind of the how we got here, and it's like what we just said about how, like, we got the previous information about, like, spying on Aerys, like, in little chunks that didn't feel super fleshed out. I sort of feel like that about we got here, like, how we got here. Like, I understand that. Like, if you were like, okay, like, what is, like, the quickest way you can explain this to me? Oh, Briallen needs to get to Nesta. To get to Nesta, she's going to use her mate, Cassian. Okay, cool. I got you. I feel that. That makes logical sense. I'm having a hard time understanding, like, I think Briallen could have done that without Kostya, so I'm not really sure why he did a big bad reveal at this moment. It feels unnecessary. It feels like Briallen could have pulled this off by herself, a la, like, Amarantha. Like, if Amarantha could pull the shit she pulled for 50 fucking years, it just feels like Briallen could have pulled at least, you know, a smidgen of that with more power. I don't know, so I don't understand that. So I don't understand why Kostya is here. I don't really understand.
Honestly, I don't think Briallen's that smart.
Is she just stupid? Is that the problem?
She's stupid and vain.
Okay, so maybe that's the
not
problem.
That
she's
smart.
Just dumb.
And she's pissed because remember when she got into the cauldron at Highburn's thing, she was like promised eternal.
Yeah.
You know, to live forever. Well, she thought she was getting eternal youth, and instead, because the cauldron was pissed off because Nesta took something from it. And I think part of it is also the cauldron saw what a horrible person Briallen was.
Yeah,
I really think that part of it is also the cauldron saying, you're a terrible person. And if you're going to do this, then I'm going to make you
miserable.
Suffer.
Yeah. I don't know. I just don't really understand that. Like, I understand what, like, okay, so it all comes down to motivations. So I understand Bree Allen's motivation because, like you said, she's dumb and she's vain and she wants Nesta, mm-hmm. basically, is like low down at
she
the end of the day.
She blames Nesta for all of her problems, even though I don't really think Nesta is the reason she has the problems. Yeah.
Right. So I understand Bree Allen's motivation and I understand Bree Allen's thought process. I need Cassian to get to Nesta. Okay, cool, cool, cool. I don't understand where Coach J fits into this. I mean, I understand that in theory, and this is what you and I talked about offline that we kind of wanted to bring here, which is, I understand that he's probably the big bad, right? Like, we thought it was Amarantha, mm-hmm. and it wasn't. It was Hybern. We thought it was Hybern, and it wasn't. It's probably Coach J. Okay, cool, but I'm gonna need a little, like, I understand that we'll probably get it in, like, Crescent City 3 or the, whatever, 6th ACOTAR book or whatever, but, like, I'm gonna need a little more why at this moment, because right now I don't understand why he gives a shit about what Bree Allen wants. Like, if he is the big bad, you would think he'd be like, nah, fuck that bitch, I don't need you. Like, you know what I mean? So I don't understand why they're working together. I don't understand why Bree Allen was like, I need Cassian, and why Coach J was like, okay, let's come up with this elaborate, like, 4-day fucking plan where we start with Eris.
Okay, but here's the thing. I think Coach J is using Bree Allen's vanity and anger, and, like, she's
to just, like, pick them off one by one.
One, he's picking them off one by one, but two, okay, he's using her vanity against her.
Sure, yeah. And I mean, I guess I sort of get it. It just feels very, I don't know. I'm trying
stupid?
To think of, like, no, it's not even that. It's like, I'm trying to think of, like, another fantasy world, like, or, like, okay, a good example is, like, for the 6 people who listen to this and also watched, like, The Magicians. I remember getting to, like, season 3 of that show and being like, I don't remember what we're doing. Like, I love the characters and the world and the day-to-day, but, like, I kind of started to forget. Like, I felt like I started to lose, like, what the hell the goal was and why the, quote, bad guys were doing what they were doing. Like, I didn't feel like that. I felt like the bad guys were just there to give the character something to do, not, like, a world that made sense. And so, like, another example you and I talked about offline was that it's like the Thanatos snap thing from Marvel, where they kind of recovered it. And so maybe Coach J will get the same kind of recovery, but I think it's like, I feel like we should be getting that a little bit now. We should be getting nuggets, because what happened with the Thanatos thing, spoiler, if somehow you missed the entire Marvel universe for the last 15 years, they did this thing where it was like, okay, he wants to, like, get all the stones, and then the whole Thanatos snap thing, he snaps, and then, like, half the world disappears. And I remember thinking, like, that is not a plot. Like, okay, but then you snap and half the world disappears. Then what? Do you gain power? Do you gain influence? What do you gain from that? And at the last second, the story did cover that. At the last second, they gave him, like, an evil villain monologue where he basically explained why he thought that was, like, better for humanity. And that's when you realize that he thought he was doing it, like, he doesn't see himself as a bad guy. He thought he was doing it for good reason, right? And so then you're like, okay, that's still dumb, but I can run with it. Like, that, you have motivation. You have, like, a backstory that makes you think that that is what you want to do. Since we don't know anything about Coach J, and the only thing we know about Bree Allen is she's a vain, stupid little bitch, I'm having a hard time. Like, okay, you're bad, but why? Like, what do you want? What do you want? And I guess coming from theater, we talk about that a lot from character to character. Every character wants something.
Yes.
And that should be conveyed in every decision you make on stage, from the minute you step on to the minute the show, like, the curtain closes. You should be working with that want in mind. You have a motivation, even if that's not any other character's motivation, even if that's a motivation you have to make up for your character because you are nanny number 3. Like, you know what I mean? Like, even if you are chimney sweep number 7, who is only in 2 songs, in theory, your character has a motivation that you know. I'm having a hard time, and usually I'm very good at identifying that in characters, which is why, like, going back to my joke about 6 of Crows, why I'm sticking it out over there, because I understand each character's motivation and I'm enjoying that journey. I understand Nesta's motivation and I'm enjoying that journey. I understand Emery's motivation. You know, I even, as much as I want to deck Feyre and Rhys, I understand their motivations right now.
Sure.
I do not understand what Briallen is doing, what Coach Jay is doing. Yeah.
Okay. I just had a bit of a light bulb
like
moment.
You said, when you said, oh, maybe I don't know the lore of Coach Jay well enough, all of a sudden I was like, oh, I wonder if that would have answered that question for me a little bit.
Possible. And I haven't looked it up, so I'm not going to right now. However, again, this is going to go back to Throne of Glass. Okay? You've got to read it. Like, I'm about to, like, just
it's
be
on
like...
on my list, my dude!
Dude, man, finish Six of Crows, and you've got to start, because I just...
You're good, right. You're good.
I'm going to say some stuff, and it's going to put us out there in the realm of... Throw in a glass. I've got to bring some stuff in because I literally, like I said, I just had this crazy light bulb moment. Mm-hmm. I could be wrong. I could be right. I don't know. But I'm going to tie all three series together in a moment because I literally just was like, I'm thinking about it. You were talking and I'm like, wait a minute.
Right.
Wait a minute.
Yeah. In fairness, so based on Crescent City 1, you knew that was also my qualm in the first book was I kept saying, I don't know why the fuck anybody's doing anything. So yeah, maybe that's the answer. Maybe it is that they're all going to tie together. I mean, we know that.
So do you remember the second time in this is an Akamaf.
Okay.
Cassian and Feyre go to see the bone carver.
Yes.
And he talks about his sister.
Mm-hmm.
And then he talks about his brother.
Mm-hmm.
And he says that a long forgotten female warrior.
Mm-hmm.
Trapped him there.
Mm-hmm.
And he says something to the effect, and I'd have to go pull it, okay? So this is literally, guys, I'm doing this off the top of my head, but all of a sudden something just kind of clicked in my brain. As he said, he's like, her name has been forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
But her line carries on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now I'm going to go to Crescent City.
Mm-hmm.
When we talk about Queen Thea and her daughter,
hers,
one everybody remembers, one disappeared.
Yeah.
Her name is lost. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, you have not read Throne of Glass, but for those of you that have, go on this small journey with me. In Throne of Glass, we keep hearing, nameless is my price. As far as Aelin, as far as dealing with the big bads, nameless is my price. What if the missing princess that nobody can remember her name is tied into that?
Could be.
And if that's the case, then holy shit.
Feeling very once upon a time, put a baby in a wardrobe and see where it ends up. But yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying I'm right, but it just hit me because we're like, wait a minute, we don't know.
Yeah.
But we don't know his story. And the thing is we know he was trapped there. I mean, even Vasa tells you that.
Yeah.
He can't leave the lake. He is literally stuck to where he is.
Yeah.
So a very powerful person trapped him. He's been there at least 15,000 years. Are the numbers starting to add up for you?
I mean, no, because I suck at that. I suck at the long-term math, and I'm really good at the short-term math that tells me that Feyre's been pregnant a year, but no.
Okay. 15,000 years ago, the Dusk Court disappears. 15,000 years ago, the Daglin are run out of Prithian.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
15,000 years ago, Thea and Peleus go through the rift.
Go through, yeah. Yeah. Okay, I couldn't remember if that was 15. You could have told me 6, and I'd been 15. Like, 15. Mm-hmm.
No, 15. So. Yeah.
That makes sense.
I'm wondering if the missing daughter of Thea is somehow tied into all of this.
Sure.
Again, going back to the whole throwing a glass part, I don't know. Okay?
Sure, I don't know.
I'm taking like, a just, wild just, shot.
Yeah.
But the fact that nobody can remember this person's name, now it's like, wait a minute. Because, you know, thinking back, like I said, even the bone carver couldn't remember her name. He was just like, her name's been lost to time.
Yeah.
So it becomes like nameless. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Which made me then, in doing all of that and putting those two, because I'm willing to bet somehow Kosche is tied into the whole Crescent City thing. I really am. But if that's the case, then does that mean, are we, you know...
So Kosche is the Thanatos of this series. Or whatever his
name. No, not necessarily, because the
Thanos,
here's the...
Thanos. I keep saying Thanatos from Greece. Thanos from the Marvel Universe.
You know, the thing about it is, though, is, you know, we're dealing with... I really got to go read up on my Firebird mythology again. I'm like, I need to read the Firebird story.
I keep looking at this next line that we're about to get to about Vasa, and I'm like, I really probably should have thought this up ahead of time.
Anyway, yeah, I just...
Yeah. Okay, I have this crazy... look this up, because now I don't know.
I have this crazy feeling that we're dealing with, you know...
I hope so, because otherwise this is all for the birds, and I don't understand what the fuck we do.
Well, it's this whole nameless... This whole nameless is my price. Hold on. Now I've got to look. I just don't care. Firebird. mythology? Story?
Okay, well, Kim looks at the mythology, I'm going to finish out, like, the paragraph before we get the snowflake, which is just that once he says, you can take him now, Brielle, and you have plenty of time before dawn, that's when we had the realization that, obviously, Cassian was what they wanted, and Kosche says, out, you know, to them before they leave, like, tell my Vasa I'm waiting. And at that, Azrael's like, I am outie. I got Eris. We got to go. We have a big problem. And Briallen's got Cassian. And he says, she says, I have need of you, Lord of Bastards. Winnow us. To which so she makes Kosche winnow them, right? So Kosche has a lot of power for a guy who's like out on a fucking lake. I don't know. Weird to me how he wasn't a problem before now. If he can, like, fucking do shit like that. It sort of feels like if you were going to confine him, then he shouldn't have any power. Well, so I don't know why he can do that, but...
Alright, so the name Kosche does come from... The name of... That comes from this story.
Okay.
A really quick summary. The Firebird story, set in a garden or forest, depending on interpretation, of an evil sorcerer, Kosche. Mm-hmm. The Firebird dances before being caught by a handsome prince. Ivan... Zverich or Zarver. The word czar is in it. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Prince Ivan. So one of the czars, like, right? Because we're dealing with Slavic Russian.
Yeah.
And then it says, the Firebird offers the prince one of her magic feathers in return for releasing her with a promise to return the favor.
Uh-huh.
So, that's a super short.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll noodle on it. I don't know, dog. I'm out of it. Anyway, but now Cassian's in Briallen's hands, and there they are. They're being winnowed off, and we get a snowflake. Back to Nesta.
Sorry, yes. Now I'm absolutely fascinated, you guys. Those of you watching realize I'm literally looking at my other screen, kind of trying to figure this out.
You're fine. You're fine. So back to Nesta. Nesta is continuing to be the bottleneck, so to speak. And she's getting exhausted. Yes. And she's just like really hoping and like trying to keep an eye on Gwen and Emery as they're trying to make it up that last bit of the summit. So she's kind of trying to like keep an eye on how that's going, but she's also obviously trying to keep the Illyrians down. And so each one that comes through the rocks, she takes them down. And I guess she says like it kind of works to her advantage that every time they like round the corner and they realize it's her, they're like, some untrained girl, this should be easy. And like that, you know, obviously works to her advantage. And she does this until only one remains. And well, that's Belius. So that's going to suck. But before he comes around the corner, she gives herself a little internal pep talk, which I love. Valkyrie, you are Valkyrie. And once again, you are holding the past. If you fall, it will be to save your friends who saved you, even when they didn't know what they were doing so.
Right.
Which I love. But now Belius has to round the corner and have his little I'm the bad guy moment where he's like, impressive work for a half-day whore. Like, I don't know why. Why do bad guys who are like not even that good at what they do, why do they talk so much, Kim?
Because they're stupid.
Like, doesn't feel like that's a thing. Like, that's a trope, isn't it? Where, like, men just start spouting off the mouth right before they get killed in books and movies. And you're like, why? Why did you do that?
But, well, we do get the reason behind why they do the blood rite and all of that. It. Which is, Belius gets up there and he's like, you know, he is mocking her about drawing the line in the sand, right? Mm-hmm. And then he goes, it didn't end well for Aenelius. He died after defending this spot for 3 days, climbed with his guts hanging out to the sacred stone at the top, and died there. It's why we do this stupid thing to honor him.
I'm sorry, just once again, I have to remind us all that a guy fucking died here. And now we're like, you know what we should do? Murder each other to the top to honor him. I'm real. Still up there with
marathons. And that's a great way to honor him. Huh?
Still right up there with marathon. You know, a guy died running 26 miles. To honor him, we should all run 26 miles and then eat donuts.
Why? Because we can.
Yeah, what? I don't know. Anyway, so we go on. I still think that's funny ever since somebody said that. Now I'm like, wow, that is messed up.
So, anyway. So he looks up to the peak. And then I love this. He goes, a flutter of light from the summit washed over Belius's features. Nesta's lips curled, widened into a smile at Belius's growl. Gwen and Emery had touched the sacred stone and had been winnowed away by its magic.
Yeah.
And then she says, seems like you didn't win. Hatred darkened Belius's glassy eyes, as if in answer, snow began falling, great clouds twining around the mountain, rumbling. The snow clung to the rocks this time. And he says, I never wanted to win. I just wanted this. And he launches at her. And that is the end of the chapter.
Which also, I feel like bullshit, Belius, but okay. There's no way. You didn't even know she existed until like a hot minute before this whole thing began. Like,
no, I agree. However, the one thing I will say, the blood rite's over. The girls touch the stone. The blood rite ends either on the number of days being passed or somebody gets to the stone.
Yeah, well, or Dawn, I guess. Yeah, because it looks like she's still waiting for Dawn.
Dawn of the seventh day.
Yeah.
Dawn of the seventh day, or somebody touches the stone. So technically, the blood rite is now over.
Yeah.
Which means she does get her magic back.
Yeah, okay, so let's talk about this momentary timeline at the top of 72, because I had a bunch of fucking questions. So So, Dapa 72. Emery and Gwyn had won. They'd made it through the breaking. It was enough. Nesta only had to hold this asshole off for a few more minutes until dawn and it'd all be over. Her power would return and she could. Nesta didn't know what she'd do, but at least she'd have the weapon. Okay, cool. I understand that. But more so than that, Nesta, don't you... I mean, obviously, we know Cassian is a little preoccupied right now, but, like, she doesn't know that. I would have thought that the thought process would have been more like, I only gotta hold this asshole off for a few more minutes until my friends come to fucking find me, asshole. Like, you know what I mean? Like, okay, whatever. that's great. Can't wait for you to have your magic back. But I was like, Nesta, I think there are a lot of people who've been looking for you ever since you got fucking snatched out of your beds, like, 5 days ago.
6 days ago.
Yeah, six days ago. Like, almost 7. So, I don't know. I was like, this is wild. But then she and Bellius are like, okay, I need to use words because not everybody's watching the video. They're duking it out. My bad.
Oh my god, that's awful.
Yeah.
They're punching away. Okay.
Yeah. They're doing whatever it is they do. we get, again, this is one of the other pretty well worded fight sequences, but like, am I gonna be able to act that out for you? No. Do I want to? No. Am I gonna read you every word on the page? No. But long story short is there's a moment where she manages to essentially like spin out of his grasp, and then in this moment, even though she's seeing like he's just filled with this like blind and just driving hatred, that's when a lightning flashed under thunder booming in its wake. And I'm sorry, but when I read that the first time, I was like, oh, did Reese come?
One could only hope, right?
Yeah. But yeah, I was like, oh, is she gonna get help? Well, no. not so much. A storm had swept around the mountain, veiling the moon, the stars, only the lightning arcing across the sky provided illumination to Bellius's onslaught. Okay, never mind. I was like, I thought this was gonna be super helpful, and it's fucking not. And they're still just duking it out.
Well, and then he disarmed her.
Yeah.
He completely disarmed her.
In a moment that doesn't really make a... Again, I'm like, is she just exhausted? Was she distracted by the lightning and the fact that it's supposed to be dawn now, but instead a storm is busting through? Or, like, I don't understand how she got disarmed at this moment.
I think it's a couple of things. I think she's exhausted.
Sure.
He's acting truly with, in my opinion, unnatural strength and speed. Truly. Okay. And
yeah,
there's this storm all around them, which is distracting her. And I think she's kind of looking for somebody, like, you know, I don't know. Like, I'm not sure, but she is definitely distracted.
Yeah.
The thing that I find disturbing, his comment about disarming her so quickly, because she's like disarmed like a novice. And Bellius is laughing. He says, disappointing. And he attacks once more. Nesta dodged assault after assault, but not fast enough to avoid the precise slices. Bellius landed to her arms, her legs, her face.
Yeah, so she's a bloody mess.
Yeah.
And while she's down, all she can think, and he's doing, like I said, he's doing the fucking, like, bad guy thing, where he's like, doing this with my bare hands will be so much more satisfying. And, you know, at the last second, she's in her head, she's just, like, you know, screaming, move, move. And she finally is starting to try to, like, yeah, like, get out of the way. And she's trying to focus on, like, drawing any power from the situation, you know, where she's like, my friends have made it. My friends made it, and that's what I wanted, but also I don't want to die. And she realizes this is the first time that she's feeling that way, where she's like, I don't want to die. She wanted to live and live well and live happily and do it with, and then she's obviously thinking of Cassian. And that's what gives her enough, like, that little edge now to, like, keep going. Like, before, her goal was just, like, don't die before the girls get out, and now her motivation is don't die so I can get out. And I think that's a switch for her.
Right. Yeah. And Belish is like, oh, you think you can beat me in hand-to-hand combat? And I love this. Blood flowed from her mouth, yeah, her nose. But Nesta smiled anyway, its tang coating her tongue. I do. Belius threw his first punch, putting the entire force of his powerful body into it. Nesta blocked it, driving her fist into his nose. Bone crunched. Belius howled, falling back a step. Nesta hissed, because my mate taught me well.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. And why don't we just ride that high? Like, part of me wants to just fucking quit right here, because chapter 73 is a fucking train wreck. So that whole little, like, admission to herself gives her enough power. It's top of 73. The word was shooting through her, like, was a shooting star through Nesta as she and Belius launched at each other, punching, kicking, dodging, as if voicing the word had given her this final surge of strength. So, do love that for her. But she also admits that there's a moment where she's, like, having a hard time, like, keeping up because she is just so exhausted and she's getting worn down. And, you know, Belius has some, you know, pent-up energy that she doesn't have, and she's just trying to fight back. And they get, you know, their, you know, fight gets through, like, past the line she had drawn in this, you know, in the dirt. And so that's a little concerning to her. And then he's like, I'm going to enjoy this. And she's still remembering kind of what I had just said, which is she's going, you know, like, I claimed it would be fine to die, but I actually don't want to. And even if I did die, like, I did everything I could. So this is, like, a fine way to die. Like, this is an honorable, like, way to go. You know, I saved my friends. I made it this far. But also, I really don't want to be killed by this fucking guy, okay?
Like... Nobody. This nobody.
Yeah. And then he's still talking. Dude don't know how to stop. He's like, I think I'd like to slit your throat. And she's just thinking, like, I guess you're gonna, because, like, I am totally running out of energy, and I really thought that, like, the daybreak was gonna come by now and I was gonna get some backup. And, like, apparently that's not fucking happening. And just as she starts to think this, thunder cracked and the entire mountain shook with its impact. Belius took one step for her, knife lifting, blood sprayed. Again, I thought it was gonna be Rhys, okay? I was like, that feels like Rhys, right? He's got to be here now, right? No, this asshole's at home, I guess.
Well, I love it, because she's like, at first, she thought the lightning flashed across his throat, opening it so wide that his blood showered the snowy air.
Mm-hmm.
But then she saw the wings, the other set of wings. And when Belius slumped to the earth, choking on his lifeblood, revealing Cassian standing there, teeth bared, blade in hand, she wondered if the thunder rocking the mountain had been his rage.
Right. And then so then you're like, oh, okay, even better than Rhys, Cassian came to the rescue, except we remember where Cassian was, right? 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 With Brielle? Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't think she was like, go get your girl. I don't think that's what happened.
No, because he comes, he helps her up, and he's being all, you know, we think he's there for the right reason, and unfortunately, he says, and now I'm going to slit your pretty little throat. We get a snowflake.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. So now we switch to his POV for a hot second, and it's that his words were not his own, his hands were not his own, as Nesta, as his mate, tried to pull away, and he clamped his arms around her hard enough that her bones shifted against his hands. He was screaming silently, endlessly, screaming at her to fight him, to run, screaming at himself to stop. And I can only imagine, okay, like, and I've said this on the podcast before, as a person who the worst thing that has happened to me is sharing a bed with somebody who had night terrors, and I did not know that prior to that moment.
Oops.
Yeah. Having had that happen, that is the fucking scariest thing you can ever, like, witness, is somebody who, like, has no idea what they're doing, okay? It is terrifying, because you realize, like, there's no way out. You can't reason with that. Like, there's nothing you can do. And you're just like, what the fuck is happening? And, like, I can only imagine how extra upsetting this is, because, like, he is armed. He is a trained killer. And she thought he was there to help her. Like, I mean, I just got shocked out of a moment while I was sleeping. Like, I thought that was bad enough. Like, you know, that was traumatizing enough. No, dude, like, this is so much worse.
Well, and he's internally screaming at her to kill him because he knows that he's not under control.
Yeah, kill me before I have to do this.
Right. And then all of a sudden we hear Briallen say, he can't obey you, Nesta Archeron. He's mine now.
Yep, and Cassian just, like, makes it so Nesta can now see Briallen, who wore the crown atop her thin white hair.
End of the chapter.
Yeah, this is, like, so upsetting. Like, I hate this for Nesta. I hate this for Nesta, because I do not even associate with this person that I dated for a hot minute in, like, what is that, 2014? 10 years ago. Okay.
Right.
I know, but I still can, like, vividly remember that moment and vividly remember, like, the next morning trying to act like I wasn't, like, ready to go screaming out of that house.
Right.
Because, like, I logically was like, okay, like, it's not his fault that he has night terrors. But on the other hand, I was like, I'm gonna get fucking murdered. Like, I have to go. Like, I have to get out. And I'm telling you, if that house wasn't in the middle of the fucking woods, I would have. But, Jesus.
Exactly.
That was a whole nightmare and a half, guys. Like, I should write a book. I got out of it fine, but you could easily have taken that situation and been like, and then she was murdered, or and then she left the house and she got lost in the woods and the wolves ate her. Like, there were so many ways that could have gone wrong. It's amazing right. I'm here talking about it. But the point is I'm still traumatized from that. Like, I can still picture that. I cannot imagine at the end of this Nesta being like, okay, this is my mate and I love him and we're gonna get married. Girl's gonna need some fucking therapy to, like, look him in the face. You and I have talked about how we're fans of Outlander on the show before. It's a little like the whole, like, Claire having to, like, go back to her husband and be like, wow, creepy how you look like that other fucking guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a little like that. Like, I feel like Nest is gonna have some, like, long-term trauma from Cassian showing up in a moment that she needed him, but instead he was just a blind killer. Like, rough.
Yeah. So how much of this, though, is and here's the thing you have to wonder is how much of this is gonna be tied into the mate bond. Sorry, I totally blanked.
Good point. Like, yeah, I guess true. They have, like, that whole added, like, effect of, like, magic that will probably help her be like, it's fine, versus, like, us as real humans on Earth are like, well, this isn't
but how much of it also is helping him
fight, like, not immediately her, kill
fight
her
Briallen. Yeah.
Sure, absolutely. I think that's totally plausible. Jesus. All right, well, we'll get into all that fucking shit. Please ignore the dog.
And I'm gonna like brush up on my Kosche Firebird story lore, because now I'm like, damn it.
Now I'm,
though I did
yeah,
find
same.
One of the stories is the Firebird and Princess Vasilia, and Princess Vasilisa.
Yeah.
Which would be Vasa.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm also a little stressed about the fact that I feel strongly that the Vasa Kosche storyline is also Lucian's story, which means, is that Elaine's story?
I don't know. But don't forget Jurian's in the mix. Yeah, but don't forget Jurian's in the mix.
I know. But yeah, I don't, I have a lot. I don't, I will say I'm still laughing about the fact that Moore, like, wasn't in this book, like, at all. Jurian wasn't, like, in this book, like, at all. I really do feel like we have hit a point in this series where we have so fucking many characters that somebody, like, has to sit out every book. And I do think that's kind of funny.
Lucian wasn't even really in this story.
That's what I'm saying. So, like, it's a little funny to me.
Nor was Elaine, other than
like have
than
so
being a pop
fucking
star.
Many characters at this point that, like, we have to like send some like out to get coffee inevitably, like you know, indefinitely, so that we don't have to deal with them. And so like I am sort of curious to see like when we get the next ACOTAR book, like if that's Elaine's book. And that's why I was saying, so if Elaine's book is Lucien's book, but Lucien's book is probably Vass's book, and Vass's book is the Coast J book, and Jurian's in the mix, then I guess Feyre and Rhys won't be in it. I guess they'll be raising their small child, right? Like they'll just be in the background. Maybe it won't be about them anymore. Like maybe they will just like fade off into the sunset and be like, we can't do this. We have a toddler.
Maybe.
I don't know. I'm just saying, like, it's wild. Like, I don't know.
Hold this thought though. We know that the, because it's been released by Bloomsbury, so yeah. I'm not spilling the beans here on anything. There's no tea to be spilled. Right. That Bloomsbury has said that they're announcing 7 new titles by SJM. Okay, great. So SJM is writing 7 more books. We know the next book she's already currently writing is the next
do
book.
Do we think the 7 start, and that's what I saw people online trying to guess, is the first of the 7 this third Crescent City, do we think?
No.
So it's 7 after that. So the next one, in theory, is the next ACOTAR. And then probably my guess would be like...
And she's still got 1 or 2 more books in ACOTAR, full books, plus novellas that she has
mentioned. Yeah, so we're thinking it's got to be ACOTAR. Two more ACOTARs.
Contracted for.
Yeah, so probably 2 more ACOTARs. Maybe the answer is maybe like 2 more novellas. Maybe like the Era storyline might get cleared up in a novella. I saw somebody say that they thought that would be a prequel.
Well, here's the thing. There's also talk that she's getting ready to drop a new series, too.
Okay, well, I gotta be honest. I kind of hope she doesn't do that, but that's just me. Mostly because, like, can we clean up can we clear up the questions we got?
Well, again, until we read Crescent City 3, we don't know what's going to be cleared up or not. So, hey. Or how many more cans of worms are going to get opened?
I don't know. That's like, I love me some Poppy and Castiel, but I've gotten so lost in that universe because now I got so sucked into the prequel series. I've now, like, my brain is like, I can't like get back to the main storyline. Like, I forgot what we're doing. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Yeah, I, like, forgot what we were doing because now I got, like, so sucked in over here that I forgot what we were doing. And then it's like you and I were talking about how, like, I'm reading Six of Crows, which is technically a series that comes after Shadow and Bone, but, like, I looked it up and they really, it doesn't matter. It's kind of like 2 separate, like, Star Trek series. Like, they're both Star Trek, but, you know, or like Doctor Who, where you could start at any Doctor and watch that set of Doctor, you know? That's sort of what I've been told about the Grishaverse situation, which is like, you just have to read like the set. You don't have to necessarily do them in order. But yeah, so I don't know. All of that to just say like, yeah, like, can we like clean up what we have, like the mess? Can we clean up the mess we have? Can we get Lucien a girlfriend before we introduce more characters to the situation? That's all I'm asking.
No, I'm with you. I totally agree with that.
So he can get, like, can we just let him? Can we also, like, maybe Azriel, like, same? Like, maybe we could just get everybody, like, where they need to be in their emotional and, you know, social and emotional well-being before we carry on.
I mean, I'm there. Now, mind you, I've also read Crescent City 2. And I am not going to get it reread before 3 comes out. So I'm not going to lie. Thank God for all the different groups where some people have posted you need to read these chapters just to like get yourself caught up. Like if you can't do a full reread, go at least reread these chapters.
TikTok where she's sitting there with a really nervous look on her face and some funny music in the background where she was like looking at all the other SJM fans like madly doing their rereads since summer of last year to prepare for Crescent City 3. Me here, who has read each book exactly once, about ready to raw dog Crescent City 3. was like, girl, I feel that.
I'm just grateful that there are other people out there that have kind of done a breakdown for me, because we've been so busy doing this and just life. Yeah. I've got to...
Well, and then, like, you and I were trying to get some of the chapter chunks figured out for Crescent City 2, and so you were like, I don't know, hold on, I gotta look it up.
My brain is like, yeah. I can't brain right now. I just cannot brain.
Math, because, like, obviously I haven't read it, so I was trying to do it, like, straight off of just, like, math of how many pages and chapters and all of that, and I was like, okay, Kim, here's the rough, like, math version. I now need you to see where the plot points happen and adjust as necessary.
Still working on that. Jeez. Oh my god.
Okay.
Guys,
well,
like,
quickly before we go, we still need to do songs.
We do. It's like I said, as I said earlier, I literally got interrupted for work. I'm gonna have to, when I get done, I have to go jump on and take care of work stuff. So yeah, good times. Can't wait. Love my job, you guys. Don't take it the wrong way. I do. I love my job, but I'm just like, really, like, I
feel that.
Kelsey knows. I had to go to work yesterday because we had HVAC issues. We lost heat in part of the building, and I had to and make the emergency call for HVAC guys to come and restore heat. They put in a temporary fix. I'm praying to God, it's not a more expensive fix. We already know that they have to actually replace one full part, but before they do that, they want to check and make sure that they have to open up a panel and make sure that nothing in that panel has to be replaced either.
What a time.
But they couldn't do it last night at 5 o'clock, because at 5 o'clock last night it was too dark for them to see what they needed to do.
Yep, that would happen in the winter.
Yeah, so, you know, tomorrow when I get up and go to the office, I'm going to be, can't wait. Anywho, just so you guys can, so to follow that, that means today's a Sunday. So today's my one day now that I'm not.
I was about to be like, oh yeah, we're recording on a Sunday. So all of this nightmare happened to you on a Saturday.
Yeah, all on my Saturday. And so, like, now I'm behind on stuff at home. And I was actually supposed to go to work today for something else. And I am just, I sent a message to the person and said, look, I'm not going to do it.
You were like, I mean, you typed voluntary. In four letters, big nope.
I was like, I'm really sorry, but, and I explained to them what was going, one of our board members, and I said, look, it was a voluntary thing for them that I was going to go help with, and I said, I'm really sorry, but no, not going to do it, not going to be there, not it. I was there yesterday, and this is why. Not that I'm worried that they're going to have a problem with it, they aren't, but, so yeah, so I'm a little fried. Anyhow, songs. We have some interesting songs. I made Chelsea
and if you
Google
have any
again.
Okay, but we will say we talked about it and we don't have any songs for Coast J because what? So if you have a Coast J song, send it to us.
I mean, I could go pull Tchaikovsky and we could pull stuff from the Firebird.
I mean,
but
that's an option.
I don't know if that's really where I want to go with this. I haven't decided. So I guess I could always come back and amend this. That being said, here we go. And in no particular order. Tightrope from The Greatest Showman. When Cassian shows up at the very end, and it's, you know, the end of chapter 73. And he and you know, it's that whole, he comes, he saves her, and then he's like, and I'm gonna slit your throat, kill you, like that whole horrible, anyway. So we have that. And then we have song. We have the next song. Sorry, the next song is "Traitor" by Daughtry.
Love him.
And it's the whole Eris and Azrael and Cassian, and we're trying to figure all that crazy mess out.
Yeah, where we went in circles. Like, so who is the traitor? Who's doing what?
Yeah,
this
pretty
is
much.
Why you have planning meetings. This is why you meet to discuss the plan ahead of time with everybody involved. Like, sort of like maybe we could have kept Eris on the inside if he was on our side. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. So anyway, hot mess, but it fits this time period. The next song is "Steal My Girl" from One Direction. Yes, I do like my boy bands.
But I love it.
Well, because it's really, again, this goes right to the end of 73, and it's the whole internal conflict that Cassian's having because of Bree Allen regarding Nesta. So, anyway. The next song is For Good from Wicked, Broadway soundtrack. It's Nesta to Gwen and Emery when she decides to hold the line and she sends them on. And she has to do the Vulcan sleep trick to Gwen.
Yeah.
No More Heroes by Westlife. Nesta, Gwen, Emery, again, Nesta telling, at this point, just Emery to continue because Gwen's refusing to. So she sends them up. The next song is Battle Cry by Imagine Dragons. It's Nesta fighting Belius, the whole chapter and a half, two chapters of them fighting, and then Cassian showing up at the end. The next song is Two Swords by Ramin Djawadi from the Game of Thrones soundtracks. It's Belius and Nesta fighting. Surprise, right? War Girl by Cybrid is the next song, and it's again, it's the battle, the fight on Ramiel. The next song I have is Tomorrow We Fight by Tommy Prophet and Servincha. I don't know if I ever pronounce her name right. I really don't. I'm sorry, you guys. I'm
beat the heck out of me.
And it's Nesta, Gwen, Emery realizing they got to get up Ramiel, they're working on it, and then where they are, and, you know, how much further they have to go.
Sure.
The next song is Game of Survival by Ruel.
I wonder.
And it's the girls going, you know, that last bit where Nesta's decided to hold the line so that they can survive, so that Gwen and Emery can get to the top, them getting to the top, them, you know, doing that. And Cassian, when he is captured and then is there to kind of deal with Nesta when they show up. And the thing about it is, that's hard, is he's internally trying to figure out how to fight and survive.
Yeah, that's also like one of my biggest nightmares. What is that thing where you're in a coma, but you're like, you are awake in your head? I forget. Ever since I learned that that can happen, that's like my biggest nightmare.
And you have no way to communicate to anybody.
Yeah, that's basically what he's experiencing.
Yeah. And the last song I have is No Time to Die by Billie Eilish. And it's the girls on Ramiel. The girls, you know, Nesta giving Gwen and Emery the chance to live and survive. And
great song.
Then her,
horrific movie.
Yeah. You know. And Billie Eilish, and it's also Nesta when she finally realizes that her mate taught her well. The girls won. She's fighting Billie. She's like, you know what? Fuck it. I want to live. I want to do this for me now. I want to do this. Yeah. I want to have a life. I want to be with my mate. And those are all the songs I have.
All right, if you come up with a Koshe song, you can let us know on any of the things. Website, MassiveFansBookClub.com, Facebook at Massive Fan Book Club and Podcast, Instagram, Massive Fan Podcast, Pinterest and Massive Fans, TikTok at Massive Fan Pod. And don't forget about the Discord. We'll make a whole channel for Crescent City 3 when that comes out, so y'all can do your little freakouts in there. I think that's all we got. Cheers, Kim.
Cheers. Yes, we have matching mugs. I did that on purpose for us. So cheers. Clink, clink.
All right. On that note, okay, bye.
Okay, bye.